Now, Leo, you're going to start in the UK, where Labour's first budget in 14 years was unveiled yesterday. How are the British papers covering it?
Well, unsurprisingly, Yinka, there's one woman on the front page of every single British newspaper this morning. That's, of course, Rachel Reeves, who's the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and she unveiled Labour's first budget in 14 years yesterday. The Times get straight to the point with their headline, a record tax burden, they call it. There'll be a £40 billion pounds in tax rises. The right-wing press are all fairly critical of Labour's budget. In fact, The Express call it a Halloween horror show, and The Telegraph have a very similar theme on their front page, as you can see this morning. Nightmare on Downing Street. They say that pay will stagnate and living standards lower. The left-wing media are a lot less critical in their headlines, as you'd expect. This is the Daily Mirror, who say spending power, as Labour have announced £70 billion of spending on public services, with record cash to transform the NHS as well as schools. In their words, it's a start to undoing 14 years of Tory negligence. Let's look at the reactions in a little bit more detail. This is a two-page spread The Guardian have this morning. In fact, they actually have 11 pages on the budget this morning. There's room for little else. They asked the question, is this what Britain needed? They call it radicalism disguised as conservatism. The key point, they say, is making visible changes, because over £22 billion promised to the NHS, but they say, if waiting lists don't go down, then it's almost not worthwhile. The Labour's budget depends on visible changes. I'll finish with the Times, who say the jury's still out on Labour's growth mission. They agreed that the UK desperately needed this investment, but the biggest question is whether the choices Reeves has made will really deliver the growth that she wants. Much is riding on her invest, invest, invest mantra. This article finishes by saying that just saying the word three times is no guarantee of money well spent.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that pans out. Let's move over to the US, because it's less than a week to go until Election Day. The Latino demographic could be key to clinching the White House, but according to studies, it's a demographic particularly affected by disinformation compared to the rest of the country. Tell us more.
Really interesting piece, actually, in the Washington Post this morning, talking about that crucial Latino vote and how it may be swayed by misinformation. Latinos are the largest minority group in the US, making up 19% of the population. But according to experts, a lie in the English language media is a lot more likely to get corrected quickly than in the Spanish language media, simply based on the resources dedicated to such efforts in the United States. Misinformation directed at Latinos is also an issue of the preferred media diet. Studies have found that they would use YouTube for political news a lot more than non-Hispanic white people do. Many Latinos keep in touch with one another over non-encrypted services like WhatsApp, which lack fact-checking functions. In fact, 54% of Hispanic adults use WhatsApp, compared to just 20% of white adults. The conservative message of linking Democrats to communism has been one that's particularly been effective in Spanish-speaking communities. For example, in 2020, an ad from Latinos for Trump took advantage of the negative connotations of the word progressive in Latin America, comparing Biden to self-proclaimed progresistas of autocratic regimes such as Fidel Castro in Cuba. The Telegraph also talk about that crucial Latino vote this morning. The headline, the real reason Latino voters are abandoning Kamala Harris and the Democrats. In the past, progressives have assumed that as people of colour, Latinos would automatically vote for the Democrats, but that's not the case, because it's a lot more likely that they'll now vote on economic factors compared to racial considerations. Critically, Latinos, especially males, are a lot more predominant in blue-collar jobs. People who work with their hands and small businesses tend to trend towards the Republicans. Lastly, immigration isn't quite proving as decisive as Democrats long believed. There's very little support for the Biden-Harris immigration policies among Latinos. The vast majority of Americans and at least half of Hispanics favour deporting any undocumented migrants.
Some interesting stuff there. Let's change gears to finish. It's, of course, Halloween today. And Leo, you found a study detailing why we might enjoy scary pranks so much.
Why do we find scary pranks so funny? I'm not sure I do. But there's a research, as you can see, in NPR today, detailing why we might find scary pranks so funny. They think it's something to do with how closely humour and fear are connected with our brains. In fact, they did an investigation into the top 100 scare pranks on YouTube, and they noted only 52 of them ended with people getting angry or annoyed. And they note that moments of laughter after such scares may be natural, as the neurological effects are calming after the adrenaline rush of being scared. But sticking with the Halloween theme, it's good news if you live in Des Moines, as you can see on NPR this morning, because for the first time in 88 years, if you're a child, you'll be able to trick or treat. Forecasted storms have forced a one-day delay of Beggar's Night, their traditional night that they hold on the 30th of October. So instead, kids will go trick-or-treating on Halloween. The tradition of Beggar's Night involves children telling jokes in exchange for sweets. According to the local paper, last year's best joke, Yinka, why don't lobsters share? Because they're shellfish. It's pretty good, isn't it?
That's a good one.
It's pretty good.
I would have laughed, and I would have given that person many, many sweeties. Leo, thanks so much for that.